We live in an era of political correctness when it's just not considered nice or loving to distinguish things, to say that someone is right and someone is wrong, to say that someone makes sense and someone makes no sense. In fact, I'll never forget a debate I was in 1996 at a church in Fairview, South Carolina. I was debating a man named Clay Kent on the topic of human free will. Clay Kent believed in human free will. I did not. The premise of the debate was that people can be independent of God. The humanity can be independent of God, because that, again, is the pure definition of free, is independence. I argued against it. How could anyone be independent of God when God himself, Acts chapter 17, gives to all life and breath and all? I debated. I stood up for the truth. Mr. Kent tried to prove his point. He failed miserably. And there was some, a debate is naturally an altercation. And in a debate, there is someone who is right and someone who is wrong. But that's politically incorrect, even in the ecclesias. And this is disturbing to me. At the end of that debate, a nice man stood up, and he was trying to do the right thing. And he said, well, Martin Zender has some good, both these men have studied hard. Martin has some great points, and Clay Kent has some great points. And we just have to learn to get along with one another. We just have to learn to live at peace. And that was the most sickening thing I had ever heard, because it was a brother with all good intentions trying to protect us from a disagreement, trying to protect the saints from an argument, from a contradicting one another. And yet, ladies and gentlemen, the truth depends on you contradicting the lies. And so somebody's right, somebody's wrong. Along this line, Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 14, the reason this is important is because I don't want to see you watered down. I don't want to see you rolling over. I don't want to see you accepting something that is contrary to the evangel simply because you think that as a believer or as a so-called Christian that you have to be nice. Let me tell you something about the era of God's grace. Grace does not equal nice. I began teaching this in 1996 about grace versus nice, and I got into a lot of trouble. I actually lost some support over it. My template, as always, my examples, as always, are Christ and Paul, who took no prisoners when it came to the truth. And so I, following in their footsteps, will take no prisoners. And I don't want you to have your truth watered down. I don't want you to feel that you have to accept every teaching, that you have to tell someone that, well, that's your opinion, that's nice. An opinion is not the truth. And that's what we're into, that's what I'm into, is the truth. That's why we're talking together. Paul says in verse 14 of 2 Corinthians 6, did not become diversely yoked with unbelievers. I've been told that we're not supposed to make judgments. We're not supposed to judge people. Well, in one sense, this is right. But in another sense, it's tragically wrong. It's right in the sense that judgment is mine, saith the Lord. We cannot send anyone to the second death. We cannot send anyone into aeonian loss. We cannot decide to save someone or lose someone. These are big judgments, the big judgments of God taking vengeance. But in our little world, in our relative world, yes, of course, we are to make judgments. We are to judge things. How else can you decide who's a believer and who's an unbeliever? Why should you be able to decide? Because Paul says, do not become diversely yoked with unbelievers. In order to not become diversely yoked with unbelievers, you have to know what an unbeliever is. You have to know what a believer is. You have to make distinctions. Paul goes on, what partnership have righteousness and lawlessness? Yet in this age we live in of moral relativism, there is no lawlessness. There is no righteousness. Everything's fine. Whatever your personal truth is, well, that's good. No, it's not. It's terrible. If your truth is bad, then your truth stinks. And it needs to be called what it is, which is darkness. And I will call it darkness. And from this day forward, you will call it darkness. Paul goes on, what communion has light with darkness? Well, in this age, light and darkness, there is no light and dark. It's all gray. It's all twilight. We're either at dawn or dusk, where there's a little bit of lightness, a little bit of darkness. No, Paul says light and darkness have no communion. This does not mean that you are to completely not have anything to do with people. It's just that you need to have your guard up. You need to set borders around the truth. You need to set a stockade with lookout towers. And you need to have a gun there, and you need to shoot down any darkness, any unbelief, and any lawlessness. Not literally. This is a figure of speech for guard what you have. Paul told Timothy that. Guard the things that I gave you. Because it is so easy for you or for me or for anybody to be swayed, to be blown about by every wind of teaching. In order to not do that, you need to make judgments. That's why I'm teaching you today about two different kinds of unbelievers. I want you to beware. I started this last week. I'm going to finish it now. Paul says, in verse 22 of 1 Corinthians chapter 1, I am in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 22. Jews signs are requesting and Greeks wisdom are seeking, yet we are heralding Christ crucified. Last week I told you about the cross of Christ, the crucifixion of Christ, how dramatic it was and how it just distinguishes people. It distinguishes people. It sets you apart immediately. The stake of Christ is a line in the sand. And what did Jesus himself say? Jesus said, I didn't come to bring peace into the world. I came to separate people. I came to turn a mother from a son, turn a sister from a brother, turn even a husband from a wife. It's terrible. But that's what Jesus said he came to do, came to bring a sword. And another way to say a sword is the stake of Christ, the crucifixion of Christ. Paul says, we're heralding Christ crucified. That's it. Paul said, I determined to know nothing among you except Christ and him crucified. And as I told you last week, the crucifixion of Christ, the cross of Christ, is the death of the old humanity. And now there is a new creation. And now we live on the other side of the cross, and we now live in newness of life. We're still waiting for our bodies to be transformed. We're still waiting to be constituted righteous rather than simply declared righteous. But that's good enough for me for now. I think it should be good enough for you to be declared righteous, that God is smiling on you. The sun is shining from God's end all the time. You're surrounded by people who don't feel this way. You're surrounded by people who constantly criticize themselves and you. You don't need to live in their world. You stand guard against it, and you shoot it down. You make judgments, you make distinctions, because there is no communion between light and darkness. And what they are dishing out to you is darkness. And there are two categories of people in this world, and only two. And that's Jews and Greeks. Well, no, I take it back. There are three. My mistake. There are two kinds of unbelievers, but there are three groups of people. Watch this. Jews, signs are requesting, Greeks, wisdom are seeking, yet we are heralding Christ crucified. There are Jews, there are Greeks, and there is we. Three groups. We're the only one of that trilogy who are believers. The rest are unbelievers. Wait a minute. That means that the Jews and the Greeks are unbelievers. This is where it gets very interesting. What are the characteristics of a Jew? Jews, signs are requesting. Now, a Jew and a Greek. The Jew represents the religious entity, any religious entity. Paul is putting Jew for the religious person. So you can tell anybody who's religious, whether they are Catholic and they have to go to Mass every day, or they're Baptist and they can't watch certain movies, or they can't watch porn, or they can't smoke cigarettes, they can't drink beer, or whether they're Pentecostals and they have to say praise Jesus every 5 seconds, or they're Methodists. What do Methodists do? I don't know. Whatever Methodists do. So many religions, they're all Jews. That's the category, Jews. Jews. They're requesting a sign. They're looking for something. They're always looking for something tangible. Yet we are walking by faith, not perception. So Jews, signs are requesting. They're panting for physical, tangible manifestations of God in their life. This is very important for you, and it's important for me because sometimes we don't see manifestations in our life. Sometimes we wish that we were better people. Sometimes we wish that we behaved ourselves differently, that we could get over a bad habit, or that we could be kinder, we could control our anger, we could control our patience, and we're all waiting on the timing of God. God has done things with us. We are producing fruit, but just not at our pace. We're producing fruit at the pace of God, but we're the new creation. We don't worry about this. Jews do. And when I say Jew, remember, you can substitute whatever person is vexing the crap out of you. Substitute Baptist, Catholic, Methodist, Church of Christ, Church of God, First Baptist Church of Holy Trinity Grace, whatever it is, that's a Jew. Now, the other category is a Greek. Greek wisdom are seeking. So the Greeks are the people who think they're smart. They think that this religious stuff is silly. They think that, as one person told me, why would you follow a man who was crucified? Perfect. That's a perfect Greek right there, because to them, the cross is foolishness, because they're seeking wisdom, sophistry. They're seeking the wisdom that comes with worldly knowledge. They're too smart for the cross, you see. The cross is too simple for the Jews, and it's too stupid for the Greeks. We're going to get that here. It's too simple for the religious person. They trip over it. It's a snare. And we're going to see that word mentioned here. To the Jews, the cross is a snare. To the Greek, it's just stupidity. So you can see that Paul has most of the world defined. He's got most of the world knocked down with these two demarcations of Jew and Greek. That covers just about everybody. They're either religious or they're worldly. But there's a third category. This is the shock. This is the shock. Nobody realizes that there is a third category. And that is we who are believing. A third category. Oh my God. And this is going to help. This is going to help some Jews, some religious people who are on the cusp maybe of believing, they're on the cusp of knowing that there's got to be something more than this box that I was born in, or this box that somebody put me in, or this organization that I joined because I thought it was the right thing to do, because I wanted to do my part for Jesus. They maybe have an inkling that, yeah, something's wrong about this, but they think that the only alternative is the Greeks. They think you're either a Jew or a Greek. If I leave the church, if I leave this box, if I quit this institution, my only other alternative is to just jump into the world like the prodigal son, jump into a pigsty, and they eat corn with the hookers, live riotously, get drunk. That's the only alternative. But no, there is a third alternative. This is what few people know. How many times have I told people Jesus Christ is not a Christian? Well, if he's not a Christian, then he must be a Greek. He must be a worldly guy. No, there's a third category, and that's a believer. Jews, signs are requesting. Greeks, wisdom are seeking. Yet we're the different ones. We're heralding Christ crucified. That's our strength. Our strength is on the dramatic death of the Son of God that wiped out the old humanity and is a promissory note that all humanity will one day come into the fullness of Christ. It's a promissory note. We're the first fruit of an entire race called the human race that began with Adam. We're the first fruit of that. There are so few of us. We're sprinkled here and there. We're surrounded by enemies. That's why I'm making this video. We are surrounded by enemies, and we need to know what to do about it to keep our sanity. Because if you don't, you'll become squishy. I don't want you to become squishy. You don't want to become squishy. We are not squishy people. We herald the cross of Christ. Guess what we're heralding? We're heralding something that someone else did. Paul said, I determined to know nothing among you except Christ and Him crucified. If somebody says, what are you all about, Zender? What's your message? I just gesture over to Calvary. It's about Christ and Him crucified and what He did for me. What did He do for you? Destroyed me. Destroyed all hopes I ever had of attaining anything righteous, of doing any good work that God could tally it up and say, oh, this is Martin Zender. Look at this. Consider my servant Martin Zender. He's doing pretty well. No, the whole humanity was deemed to be refuse, unacceptable, incapable, helpless, altogether useless. And as we read in Romans 3 last week, all avoid Him. You were one of them. I was one of them. So we're so different. We're so different. And it's not to our credit. God gave us the faith, of course. You know the two verses, Romans 12, 3, Ephesians 2, 8 and 9, Philippians 1, 29. These are the big three. If you want to explain to somebody why grace is a gift, why belief itself is a gift, you go to Romans 12, 3, Ephesians 2, 8 and 9, and Philippians 1, 29. And if they say to you, give me another verse, say no. I gave you three. In fact, if you only gave them one, that should settle it for them. I'm going to continue this tomorrow. But this is what I do. Take it from me. When people say, when I give them a verse that absolutely proves it. For instance, I gave them a verse, Isaiah 45, 7, that God created evil. They can't believe it. And they go, give me another verse. I have other verses. I have a dozen more verses. I say, no. Deal with that one. Deal with that one. Martin, give me another verse to show me that no one's seeking out God. No. I give you Romans 3, 11. That's the only verse you need. I tell people about the salvation of all. There's a dozen verses in the Greek scriptures to teach it. I give them 1 Timothy 4:10. God is the Savior of all humanity, especially of believers. And they sit there and, well, give me another verse. No. Deal with that one first.